we are joined by a man who is known for his patience at the plate, but was just very patient with some technical difficulties. Former three-time All-Star Jason Kendall. How you doing, dude?
Good, guys. Yeah, the technical difficulty stuff. Trevor, you're a pretty good baseball player, but you're also a pretty good computer guy. You walked me through it.
Yeah, that was wild. We appreciate you. How's quarantine going for you? We see the stash.
I can't hear Trevor now.
Trev probably just still has himself muted. That's a his thing.
Yeah, I'm back.
Okay, all right.
All is good, and I hope you guys are out there being safe. And I dig the show, and it's just one of those things. It's a crazy, crazy time, and there's so much unpredictability, or whatever you want to call it. I know that's a word that is out there. So, you know, people go out, stay safe, stay inside.
Yeah, we talk all the time about, is baseball coming back? What's it going to look like when it comes back? But in reality, nobody knows anything. And it doesn't matter if Rob Manfred wants to play baseball. It doesn't matter if the owners want to play, the players want to play. It's just, is the government going to let anything happen? So there's a new proposal out today about doing the Grapefruit and the Cactus League, and everyone's freaking out about that now. But like I said, nothing's going to happen until we get this thing figured out and the government says, okay. So all these predictions are just that. They're just predictions.
Without a doubt. And, you know, I had this conversation the other day that, listen, your veteran players, the guys that have been there, they're going to be – they know what to do to get ready. It's going to be – and you know what? I don't know, Trevor, did you play in the Arizona Fall League?
I did.
Okay, I mean, it's not really that much fun. I was fortunate enough to play when the Scottsdale Scorpions had Michael Jordan. So at least once a week I knew that there was going to be a crowd because everybody wanted to see Michael Jordan. But other than that, it's not – there's zero atmosphere. And it's amazing what the fans actually bring and the adrenaline that it brings you. And I think the big league – if they can get started by July 1st, whether it be with fans or without fans, I think that they'll be all right. I mean, you're still looking at a maybe 70-game schedule. If it gets in that little area where there's might be 40 games, the only thing that I personally can think of is that would be neat is it doesn't matter if the Yankees are supposed to win or the Dodgers, et cetera, et cetera. You might have, if the Florida Marlins are, you know, a low market team gets hot at the right time and can go out and put up some numbers, that would be interesting to me maybe. But I think more than anything, I'm worried about the minor leagues. Is there going to be a minor league system? What about the players around the bubble? What about the, and then you can even take this to the trickle down effect to where, what about the high school seniors? Not only obviously the spring sports, but you're looking at their graduations and everything else. But, and I don't know the whole details of the Division I thing, but I know that they're giving all spring sports, they're allowing them to, I guess it'd be the seniors, to come back for one more. Hurrah, which as yeah. I truly believe they should. But now it's going to eliminate your mediocre players. I mean, the ones that are in high school that might have half a scholarship somewhere, wherever it may be, whether it be junior colleges or D1s, D2s. So I'm more worried about those guys. And I say the minor leagues more than anything because these are the next generation stars.
And I agree.
The rookies that might possibly make the big league ball clubs right now, hopefully the training staff, which I'm sure they will, and the weight and conditioning coaches will follow up and make sure that they're doing their routine. But, you know, when you're 21, 20 years old and this game's getting younger, you think you're Superman. So when you get to the big leagues, and you guys can ask Trevor, it's a different ball game. And so I'm more worried about the minor leagues because if, say, there is a 40-season game, and I'm just totally throwing this out there, I would assume that there would be no minor league season.
Yeah. Right now, I think what they have suggested right now is having, like, a pool of players, like a 40 to 50 deep per team pool of players, and they would just keep the extra guys, whatever the roster ends up being, if it's 30 guys, if it's 35 guys. The rest of the players would kind of just hang back and be ready to go. But as of right now, there is no minor league season plan. They don't know what they're going to do. And I agree with you. This whole thing has such a ripple effect on the entire industry. And it's going to be interesting to see how we move forward. We're going to move forward. The game doesn't wait for anybody.
But at least the union and the player association are talking, because that's not always the case.
Yeah.
So at least they're communicating, and that might sound funny, but it's actually really serious. At least they're communicating on, trying to find a plan.
Yeah, we kind of talked all about if, the draft does go down to only 5 rounds or 10 rounds, then those high school players who weren't top 5-round picks but are pretty set on just playing ball and not going to college and didn't even apply, that's really scared for them. JUCOs will probably be bringing in a lot of guys and getting a lot more action, but the ripple effect there is crazy to think about, and no one's really even talking about that. But a lot of these high school baseball players, they're in a weird state of limbo right now.
It's unbelievable. I mean, even if somebody drafts you in the 28th round, you're like, here, give me my plane ticket and a can of Copenhagen and I'm gone.
Yeah.
Let me see what I can do. It really is now, but if it's going to be five, I heard more towards five, but 10, whatever it is, I said, you're going to weed a lot of players out. And I guess if you have the mindset to where, all right, nobody's going to outwork me. Nobody's going to out. If you have that attitude to keep working, I mean, maybe it's a good thing. I don't know. I just know that this game is, it's a special, special game, and everybody wants to play it. And, if you're fortunate enough, this is one thing. Everybody thinks that their kid is, or they're going to go get to the big leagues. It doesn't happen. You're not going to be the next Serena Williams, Derek Jeter, or Mike. It's not going to happen. I mean, if they're fortunate enough to get, play high school ball, fortunate enough to go and have a chance to play at college, and then if something happens, get drafted, which now it might, those 28th, 29th rounders might not get drafted. I just hope that there's a plan beyond this year, which it's uncharted waters. You just don't know. Yeah. But I think more than anything, I worry about the kids that are in the minor leagues right now.
Well, I think there's still time for me to become the next Serena Williams, so I will check you on that. And B, I know Trevor's eyes lit up when we start talking about this season getting a little weird and, maybe 35-man rosters. Trevor kind of, he raised that eyebrow and he's like, I might still have it. If maybe your local Padres come up and they're like, hey, we need a guy to get on base who has a really nice mustache for 40 games. Do you still got that?
Well, I'm going to tell you what. First of all, with your giddy up right now, without a doubt, you're on the right track to go and do the Serena Williams thing, if you can play tennis. This is my quarantine mustache. But I don't know if it's cute.
This is what I said about the 50-man rosters. I said there's no doubt in my mind because Jace, I'm only a year removed from playing. There's no doubt in my mind I'm still a top 1,500 player in the world. That's 50 guys a team. I feel like I could still go out there and be a top 50 guy. But once you start going down to the 40 and it's 1,200, I kind of went that route last year. I didn't get put on any damn 40-man. So I know I'm kind of in between that 1,200 and 1,500 range. So if I'm going to go, now's the time, because another six, I'm going to be out of that 1,500 range. There's no doubt in my mind.
If they're going to do that, I'd go to the cages right now, or I'd have your wife throw you some BP soft toss or hit off a tee, because there's something about a veteran presence. And I'm being serious. If you're actually really being serious about this, there's something about a veteran presence as a catcher, as a pitcher, whatever. I mean, being out of a year, that's not that big of a deal. You'll catch up in 2 seconds because your body's trained to do that. Right. Give one more shot. You might, if they have a 30, because they're going to have to expand the rosters.
Yeah.
I mean, they have to. So, hey, plus it's nice out there. Go out to the park and get some wiffle balls or whatever.
I am like 100% joking about it.
No,
to be clear.
I put something in the back of your head, though. Because you're like, hey, honey. And go make a quick $500,000 next 2 months. You'd be like, get out of here.
I'm having too much fun now. Here's the thing. We brought you on because we want to talk about you. The game, we don't know anything about the game. We want to talk about Jason Kendall, your career. And, I knew a lot about you because for some reason, when I was very impressionable, 11, 12, 13 years old, I feel like that's when kids really kind of get into baseball and big leaguers and know who guys are. At least that was my experience. My guys were you, Charles Johnson, and Mike Piazza. I had something for catchers. I don't understand what it was. And you guys were all kind of, in those 96, 97 seasons, you guys were all going off. And I'm looking at your numbers, And you put up some crazy stats, man.
You know what? I had fun.
Do you know all your stats? Because I got them up right here.
I don't really look at them. But I mean, I know that I had some hits, and I was a different type of catcher. I wasn't, you know, I didn't hit for power, which is crazy because I can hit a golf ball a mile, but I couldn't hit a ball over the fence.
You did, but you did hit for power. So you got 2,200 career hits. That's ridiculous. And then when you go back and start looking at this, I mean, your OPS plus is really nice. And I know like back in 96, 97, 98, you guys probably weren't looking at OPS plus. It probably wasn't even around. But, you know, the more and more these stats come out, they kind of are able to take away from the counting stats or the traditional stats. You put up some excellent numbers. I mean, that's why you're, you know, you have a 42 career WAR.
Do you look at those numbers, Jason? All do you even?
I don't know WAR. I don't know any of this stuff. I don't know analytics.
It's but, setting you in a positive light. Let me tell you that much.
Well, I guess that's a good thing. But you know, I'll never forget it. I had to change my swing probably in about 2000. Jimmy Anderson was pitching. It was in April, and he threw a sinker down and away. Kind of one of those guys that in a cut and just snapped my thumb. I had to change my swing after that. I ended up playing the season. I lost all my gap-to-gap power, and I became kind of a punch and Judy hitter, hitting to the situation, you know, runner on first, hit the hole, hit and run guy. And I had no problem with that because I was the one who, I mean, they wanted me to have surgery right then and there. I didn't. Everybody thought it was my ankle the ankle's fine. Ankle was probably stronger than the other one. It was my thumb. It was mashed potatoes at the end of the season.
Which hand was that?
My left hand.
Was it from catching or was it from hitting?
Down away, and the ball cut, and just and I'll never forget that guy's name, but Jimmy Anderson. But I would say it wasn't his fault. I just didn't know where the ball was going. Yeah. So I mean, but that was where I really had to change my swing, and I had to basically let go of every time I made contact, let go of the bat with my hand instead of having both hands, you know, falling through. So. I mean, you know what? And what I tell these guys now, and Trevor, I was fortunate enough to be behind the scenes with the Royals from basically your great years, you know, 2010 through 17 or 16, and I would always, and it was a different. It was so good for me when I played. I knew who the owners were and who the GMs, but I didn't communicate with them. I was so locked in on what I had to do that day to help the team win. And whether it be something, you know, bunting, catching, calling a game, getting a guy over on second base. But I got to see the front office side. And I was on the field before games, going over scouting reports. And I will say this, when did you have 20 something bombs? Was it 15 or 16?
I had 22 and 15.
Okay, so it was 2015.
Can confirm.
Thank you.
It was somewhere around there. And they were all, you know, it wasn't Maurer. It wasn't. And so I would go, no. You watch him. This is who doesn't beat you. Because every catcher should have a game plan going back to, there's one guy, maybe two, that don't let him beat you. Well, the Royals hadn't been to the in the playoffs since 85. And, I mean, obviously being in the Central, we played you guys quite often. That was when I started noticing, I'm like, hey, don't, no. Screw Maurer, screw everybody else. Do not let this guy beat you because he's the one back there. So I got to know a lot about you from behind the scenes. But I guess that all being said, it was so good for me to do that because I didn't know. I didn't know what they did upstairs. And there's so much analytics. There's so much. And I'm a pretty straightforward guy. I mean, I kind of tell it like it is. And, you know, general manager would be like, hey, what do you think? Yes, 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 yes. Jason, what do you think? No, I think he stinks. Get him out of here. I mean, I was pretty straightforward. I think I always have been. But it was neat for me to do that, to see the way it operates up there, because there's a lot of stuff that goes on, and these guys, right, they're right now, all the, your GMs, your assistant GMs, they're working their tails off right now, trying to not only figure out when they're going to play, and I'm talking about scouts and everything. They're right now, they're busting their butts trying to figure out, okay, well, what kind of roster are we going to have? Is it going to be the 30, 32, 29? So it was neat for me to do that, because now I got the whole full baseball part of it. And but I just remember you those years, because we played you guys 19 times or whatever it was.
We played a lot. And it was the Royals, man. They went from playing us, and we were kind of – we were the low man on the totem pole in the AL Central at that time. Both teams were. Then all of a sudden, man, they got – Hosmer came up and he started to develop a little bit, Moose and Sal and Gordon, and then the bullpen came, and that changed everything for you guys. I totally remember that 14-15. It was like, that was when bullpen started, and I'll say this word, it became weaponized.
Without a doubt.
And it was like, if you didn't have a lead going into the fifth or sixth inning against the Royals in that time, you were going to lose, because you were going
to
score.
Has to go five innings.
Yeah, you weren't going to score against Kelvin.
Luke Hoche was throwing 98.
Yes. So that was an interesting time, and that's pretty cool. I knew you were back there, but then to think now, you know, you worked with Sal, who was one of my mm-hmm. favorite catchers to watch. You worked with Butera, who we just had on the show last week. Now I can kind of see your presence with those guys, and I could see how you influenced them for sure.
You know what? It was a fun time to watch. I got the American League championship ring, and I have the World Series ring. Never got one as a player. As far as I made it was to the ALCS in 2006 with the Oakland A's. But it's not the same as a player. But just watching these guys gel in that 2015-2016 year was neat to see, because they did what they were capable of doing. And I think if you look back, with the exception of the Astros, over the World Series teams, they do what they're capable of doing. They get guys over. It makes me sick to my stomach with it's a 1-1 tie in the eighth inning, say, and you get a leadoff guy, and you got your right-handed hitter hooking balls into left field. Play the game. It makes me sick to my stomach. But, you know, you have to learn to change with the generations. And I completely understand that. But if you look back at the team, once again, excluding the Houston Astros, all the teams have done those things. They've all done the little things. And obviously, when you get to the bullpen, they got that too.
When you go to the front office with the Royals and you see the game from the different side of things and all that, it seems like you embraced a lot of it and found a lot of it interesting. Was there anything you flat out rejected that they were looking at, like an analytic or a way of thinking that the front office had, and you were like, no, that doesn't matter at all?
That's a great question. I did. And there's certain things that, in my mind, there's great things about analytics. There's great things about your old school. You need to learn everything the analytics are doing right now is just the way other people, okay, my spin rate. Oh, yeah. How many times did the curveball spin? Okay, well, if he hung it, it's going to get hit. I don't care how many times it's swung. If he's down in the zone, you're going to swing and miss.
It's so
bottom
true.
Bottom line. It doesn't matter about what the spin rate is. Now, I use the analytics. Like, you know, players are creatures of habit. And, you know, whether they know it or they don't know it, but I don't know, say whoever steals 50 bases a year, they usually have 75% of their bags on a certain count, say 1-1. So those are times where you might, as a catcher, slide step. You might do it, whatever. So I love the, you know, obviously you have your first pitch swingers, and I can sit here and talk this all day, but it's just the lingo. It really is just the lingo. They call spin rate. Well, no, that was a good curveball. I don't care how many times it was spun. If it's hung to a big league hitter, it's going to go a long, long way. And I'll never forget, somebody goes, oh, well, this guy had a good spin rate. This is maybe 4 years ago. And I'm like, okay, get your spin rate out of here. He's one of the guys upstairs or up top. And I go, oh my God, look at the guy that's on the bottom of the list. His fastball didn't have a good spin rate. Didn't he win the Cy Young last year? His name's Clayton Kershaw. So, I mean, there's certain things that can that but it's the lingo is the same. So I think some of the analytics are great. I truly do. And I think some of the old school stuff, but now you learned it. It's just the lingo.
We had a whole show on that, and I was trying to explain, like, because when people watch baseball now, a lot of times the guys in the booth, they're old school guys. They talk about, you know, how the game was when they played, and they get really frustrated with these new terms, these new analytical terms. And what I keep saying to people, and we had a whole show on this, I'm like, these terms, that's all they are. This is just a different word for what you already know.
It's so true.
So yeah, a high spin rate guy on a four-seam fastball, high spin rate. All that meant to me when before this term came out was that his ball had life on it and it kind of rose. The guys lived at the top of the zone. Verlander has been doing that forever. So when you faced him, you said this guy's got late life, up in the zone, layoff. It's going to continue to go. It's hard to get on top of that ball. Stuff like that. It's really easy if you just
now, Trevor,
it like
ask
that,
me this question: when you dug in and you got your toll, you're in. You thinking about a guy's spin rate? Are you think you better not be because you have zero chance? No,
I agree.
What Trevor said is all that stuff he did to prepare before the game. But when you get in the box, you just you're straight and see the white thing to hit it. Yeah, I mean, obviously you have, you know, tendencies who you're facing and et cetera, but. It's, I mean, I don't, I will say one thing about the analytics thing that I don't like. I don't care if you played Little League, high school, college, whatever. At least you played. One thing that I will say this about a player is somebody who has never played a game. It's people like the resumes. And when I say resumes, and I'm talking about like, yeah, did you play, at least you played ball. And so some of these guys that come in who have never even touched a baseball, couldn't throw it, you know, 10 yards, they're ending up running the show, which that's the one thing that bothers me about all that stuff. And that's just the way the game is now. And, you know, you have to change with those times, I guess. But the players know that stuff without a doubt.
They do. You know, I think that players – when I think of guys like that, like you're saying, guys that are very, very analytically driven – we see that in the front offices everywhere now. It's basically like, get me an Ivy League grad in here who's good with numbers, and let's put him in. And I think what they do, because they don't have the feel for the game necessarily, I think that what they can bring is those numbers that jump out. They can find numbers that maybe jump out that you can use. So that's what I would always look for when I was prepping was, is there a number, is there a count that jumps out where this guy throws X pitch 70% of the time? Or is there a count that I'm struggling in? One of the things that I learned with the Phillies, they brought up, they're like, hey, you're too passive in these hitters counts. You need to be more aggressive in the hitters counts because that is where you're going to get your slugging up. That's where you're going to have your extra base hits. So that was something I never really even thought of. But, you know, some we'll call them a nerd. Some numbers nerd.
Yeah,
found
some
that,
nerd. Some, yeah.
Brought
I mean,
it to me and I
certain
love
organizations.
It. Yeah. So,
and that's good. And you're a power hitter. And that was, but I mean, also, and that's great advice, but also, I mean, you know, you're going to swing regardless. And obviously, the scoreboard dictates everything. If you're losing 8-0 and you got a 3-0 count, you're not going to swing. Just little. But that's where, you know, some of it get, and then they try to throw it in your head with some of these, the younger kids. And, like I said, you're up to thinking like, okay, well, Bob over there told me not to, you know, and that's where you mess these kids up. But and that's something awesome that Philly brought to you that you could take on and pass on to whoever.
Yeah, you have to be able to weed through the numbers. That's what I kind of tell everybody.
Absolutely.
Don't be overwhelmed by the numbers. Find something that works for you, and that's it. You don't have to, like, when they send
you
over a full packet, just let it go.
A mediator between your old school guys and your analytic guys, combine the two because they're both good. They really are. And there won't be any of this crap that goes on anymore.
Seems like they're trying to do with the new managers, you know, by bringing in these young managers like Booney and Ross and Tingler and Padres. It seems like that's who they're searching for as a manager now, is now that intermediate between the stats and the player, and trying to understand, like, hey, this is why you're sitting today, or this is what we think you know. And it seems like that's what they're looking for in new managers. It's totally different than, you know, back in the 70s when managers were putting hit and runs on every single inning and calling for bunts, like every single elder at bat, there's a lot less like field managing going on, it seems like, at least now.
Oh, without a doubt. And everybody's scared of up top. And nothing, not getting Boone's done an unbelievable job, and I'm sure Ross will too. So I don't want to, but I mean, some of these guys, and I'm not saying either or are, they're yes guys. And there's, I know for a fact, certain,
you have to be.
I know for a fact that certain managers, when they went into interview, were like, hey, do you care if the lineup is written and on your desk before, you know, before you get into the ballpark? And certain guys say yes. I'm going to tell you what, if you're going to have me as a manager, I'm doing it my way. And listen, I know how you have to know how to treat people, bottom line. And this goes back to what your parents told you. You treat people the way you want to be treated. And you treat them with respect. It truly, truly goes back to that. And it's a different era. I get it. Let them have fun. Go ahead. But, you know, as long as you get your work in and you do what you're supposed to do, go out and do it. I would love it. And, you know, I've had a couple opportunities. And you know, I'm very fortunate to play in an era where, you know, I watched my father go through, you know, he went through a lockout and two strikes, played in the big leagues as well. And, you know, he came home and had to work UPS. He came home and had to work construction. So I really never saw him. But those guys fought to where we were fortunate enough to make the money that we made. And I always told myself that if I get out and I'm not going to miss my kids' years of high school, little, whatever it may be, soccer. And because my old man wasn't there for all that stuff. And Trevor and I were fortunate enough to make a good enough living to where we can sit at home and hang out and it's all great. But so that's what I'm doing right now. But I mean, I'll tell you what, if I were to manage, I would completely go outside the box. Run around first and second, no outs. You got the guy that can handle the bat. Hey, put a hit and run on. Yeah, if you, what do you got to do? You got to hit a ground ball to third base. He's covering.
I would love to see that. I would love to look it up. Like how many hit and runs were put on last year without the pitcher? Like pitcher gone. Oof. How many hit and runs were actually put on last year in the big leagues? I bet it's less than 15.
Without a doubt. All the managers do right now is look like this, and they know the camera's on them. We're mad. That's all they do. I mean, I can't say all of them. I mean, and because you have to get 25 grown men with different personalities to go out and play. So I can't say that. I mean, that's wrong for me to say that. But there are definitely certain yes guys out there. But and I think that, once again, with the exception of the Astros, go back to the last 10 World Series, the manager was able to get their players to do what they're capable of doing. And they did put a lot more hit and runs. I mean, I guarantee you there's more hit and runs put on in the playoffs last year than there were the whole season, just like Trevor just said.
Yeah.
That is something that's funny to think about, because baseball comes back. Baseball, like real old school baseball, comes back in the playoffs because runs are at a premium. You know, if you score one, the momentum shifts and all of a sudden it totally changes the game. But I will say this, I bet I don't think there's one manager in the big leagues right now that writes his own lineup. Not one.
Well,
Francona.
Yeah, Terry.
You think Terry? You think he does?
I think Tito's like the last one.
Maybe. You know, even Bob Melvin in Oakland doesn't write his own lineup. So.
And that's one thing about a player which is completely awful is when you are going to give certain guys days off, and when you are going to, and hopefully this happens. I mean, like one of your utility players, you know, hey, you know what? You're going to go out and face Verlander. We're going to give so-and-so. You better let them know the night before so they can mentally get prepared. And if everybody's writing a lineup out, which I kind of agree with you, I know for a fact that after games, the GM manager come down, they have conversations, and now I'm usually out of there by then, or when I was still with the, so I don't know what else was talked about, but you better let everybody know, whether you're having a day off or your utility guys know if they're playing. That's something that I hope goes on.
Yeah. And something that we love is that the game does have a way of leveling itself out naturally. And I think some of the stuff you're talking about is going to come. I think I'm like you. I get infuriated. There's a light hitting guy up, and they've got one of those new righty shifts on them. And it's like, dude, if you just slap it through the hole, you're going to hit 8 home runs this year. Like, but you could have a base hit and keep it going. But that's for another thing. And I think what Trevor said, we got to keep this on you, dude. And I want to talk about the other side because, yeah, I mean, you've got some awesome OBP stuff and the hits and everything is crazy. You were also a stud defensive catcher. What have you watched kind of the evolution of the catching game? And I mean, the answer is yes, because you were doing special assignments for the Royals and things like that. But what have you seen change in the catching game, and what do you like about it? What do you hate about it, or is it kind of the same bullshit? Like, I mean, pitch framing's always been around, we just have new metrics for it now.
I hate the word pitch framing. Just catch the ball where it's pitched. But so if you look at, and there's so many different things that go into it. So say Joe West, who's been around for 100 years, is behind the plate, and you're gonna pull this where I'm gonna frame. He's not going to give it to you. Now, the younger guys that I don't know, they might, because they know that it's the new generation. So you better know your personnel, who's going to be behind the plate, who's not, et cetera, et cetera. What you can. But for kids, like when I teach the kids how to catch, I just catch the ball. Pretend it's an egg. The softer the hands you have, the better. It's soft, soft, and soft. I can't stand that. But it also depends. Some umpires are – at least they're getting graded now, but they've also taken away a lot of just the pure baseball part of it. But I mean, they have to be accountable as well as the players. So, but I always look who's behind the plate. If you have a guy that's been in the big leagues for 5-6 years umpiring, he's not going to give this stuff. If you got like maybe a 1 or 2 year guy, he probably will. I'll guarantee right now, Joe West. I mean, I caught in front of him forever. Is not going to give the guy that. So, I mean, but it's to each his own. The way I don't like the word pitch framing, because it means that. Did I ever do that? Maybe kind of trying to call it to get a strike. But when you are going to teach somebody how to catch, just say soft hands, catch the ball. Don't go out and get it. Don't just wherever your arm is, just catch the ball. Catch the ball as soft as you can, because it's such an easier way to explain to, whether it be, you know, kids from college, high school, in the big leagues, because trust me, a lot of these kids in the big leagues, everybody is scared of these kids, are scared of these guys in the big leagues, because they're making way more money than you have to have that coaching staff or at least somebody be like, no, I don't care who you are, what you make, you look like a jackass behind the plate. Just catch the ball and get off your damn knee and run around. You got guys on a knee with a runner on third base now. I mean, you can't have that if you want to be a perennial Gold Glover, or if you want to win.
That's, I was going to ask you about
that. Val Perez and me butted heads every day. Every day, without a doubt.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that. That's something I like to ask. So we've had a couple different catchers on, and we talk about the low strike and trying to get that low strike. And you've seen the guys get on their knee and then kind of show the target, but as the pitcher's, you know, in his windup, they drop the glove to the ground, and then they try to come back up with it. Are you, because that's
no,
that is like
no, it's awful.
Every
it's,
single
it's,
catcher because, is doing that right now.
Trevor, you would be surprised on how many pitchers actually rely on your target. Really is. It's unbelievable. So a lot of guys, I mean, they come ready to throw, and then now their head's going like this. I mean, and now you got the umpire. Now, if I'm hitting and I'm moving my head, hitting's the hardest thing to do in all sports, and I'm moving my head, and I hope you guys can see this. What's the ball doing?
Yep.
The ball's doing that. So you can do it, just be your head. It's the same thing with umpires. If you're going down, up and down, their eyes are moving up and down, and you're not going to get the calls that, you know, those borderline pitches. You're just not going to get them. And as a pitcher, your head's supposed to stay still. So now you're going, oh, it's just, listen, you have to have pitchers are the most important part in the game, but some of them are very sensitive. There's a lot of people that are very sensitive, and you have to learn how to, you know, who to kick in the butt, who not to, but there'll be pitchers that don't like this. This right here, up and down, not only does it screw up the pitcher, because I'm not saying every one of them, but a lot of them. But it's the guy behind you who's calling him. He's not going to give you. If you're moving all over the place, he's not going to give you those borderline pitches.
You were known as a guy that pitchers wanted to throw to. I mean, that's why you played so many damn games. When you retired, you caught the fifth most games in history. That's a lot of games. So, you know, we talk about old school, we talk about new school. You embodied what a catcher was. I mean, a guy that was out there all the time, handled the pitching staff, guys wanted to throw to you. And now I think catchers are kind of getting away from that, and it's more about their personal framing stats rather than does a pitcher feel comfortable throwing to me. And I think, like you said, pitchers are the name of the game. If pitchers aren't comfortable, you're not going to win that game. So I've always said, like, you got to have a guy you feel comfortable with. And if a catcher's solely focused on stealing a strike for you and making sure his pitch framing statistics are better, I think it's going to end up going back completely the other way and getting rid of all that. And no one's going to worry about pitch framing. And it's like, we need our pitchers to feel comfortable. That's what we need.
Bottom line, I'll tell you a funny story about, and I can't think of the guy's name right now. He used to be the White Sox, not with the Braves now.
Flowers?
Help me out. Who?
Flowers?
Tyler Flowers?
Flowers. This is a front office story that just made me laugh. And so they got he got a pass ball. And they gave it a pass ball. Well, the ball hit off his glove in the air, and it was a pass ball. And he goes, well, you know what? He sends a letter to Major League Baseball and our guy, saying, like, that was not my pass ball. It was a wild pitch because he crossed me up. And I'm not a big Flowers fan, but and the next year he's the best framing catcher. He's the guy that goes up and down, up and down, up and down, and you get dizzy. But I'll never forget when he sent that letter in. I was like, "You've got to be kidding me!" So you are so right. Oh, that's because that one. It doesn't matter if you want a gold glove. First of all, the coaches vote on it. If they like you, they're gonna vote. And half of them get the ballots right after BP. They're tired. They're all old. They want something to eat. And they're like, hey, bat boy, can you fill out my gold glove thing? And it doesn't matter. And that's honest to goodness. And the bat boy like, oh, here, put it, and then give it to the PR guy. And so, I mean, obviously there are certain, you know, gold glovers out there, but it doesn't matter if a pass ball, if you have three pass ball, four pass ball, five pass ball. You can have 20 pass balls. If you're hitting 300, you're going to get it for the most part. Yeah, and a lot of the other coaches will go, yeah, who won it last year? Just write down whoever won it last year. That's why you see a lot of these guys getting gold gloves over and over and over and over again, because these coaches getting off BP, they got to get dressed, ready, go have their meetings with the pitchers or whoever it may be. And So one pass ball is not going to – there's no reason to write a letter to the commissioner's office, as Flowers did, and say, you know what, he crossed me up. Well, first of all, if he crossed you up, it is your fault. Because, I mean, even if you guys weren't on the same page, the ball hit your glove. A lot of players are soft. I always knew that when I went out, even if I was banged up, and if I went out to – I knew I could do something. Even when I was awful my last 5 or 6 years, I knew that there was something that I could do to help win a game. And that's what, whether it be calling a game, and I knew I couldn't hit anymore. So I'm like, I better learn how. I mean, I studied, I worked. There's two easy things. Like, I just remember going back to Maurer. Okay, well, the great ones, okay, say Joe Maurer had a 2-1 knock off of Zach Greinke 3 months ago, and it was a changeup. Well, 3 months later, he's in Kansas City, say, and he gets in a 2-1 count. What's he looking for? That's what separates the great ones. And I'm just using him as an example, because this is actually what happened. And so I knew that, and I did my homework, and I had this – I couldn't tell you how to do my kids' homework, but – I can tell you what I threw Todd Helton 20-something years ago in a 2-2 count. But the great ones, your 300 hitters, they remember. And I'll never forget. Maurer came back up and, all right, busted him in, bats in the stands. And they're throwing helmets in the – and I love that. That was what was cool about me for catching. But like I said, when I was awful, there was always something that I knew, and that's why I played. I loved it. And Trevor, correct me if I'm wrong, but it is such a short window, your playing career. I mean, I played, well, I say 16 because I got paid for the 16th, but 15 years, and it went by in 2 seconds. And that's what I tell
you. It does seem that way. You played, this school, I mean, you played almost double what I played, and I feel the same way. I mean, I'm looking at your numbers now. You weren't horrible your last 5 or 6 years. I'm just going to tell you that right now. 2008, which was you were 2 years after that. You put a 2.9 WAR up.
You don't care about WAR,
dude. I went a year in Oakland without hitting a home run, and it was awful.
Let me see.
So did I.
And I was 2005. Balls on top of the wall, and like, oh, someone just get out of the park.
Hey,
my goodness.
You talked about how you got beat up with the your thumb got injured, and everyone knows catchers take beatings and all that shit. But you got beat up in the batter's box too. You had six seasons with more than 20 hit by pitches. You led the league a year, 2 years back to back with 31 hit by pitches. Well, what was going on there? Is that the scouting report on you? Is that
my scouting report always been pitch me in, and it started getting so bad that the trainers. I started getting these big old contusions on my left. I mean, I learned how to do it. I mean, I would rather take one in the bicep as opposed to getting, you know, trying to get out of the way, breaking a rib, being out, you know, 6 weeks. So they made me put an elbow pad on, and I'll never forget because the first day I went 0-for-4 with it, and I ain't wearing that anymore. And I got it the next day. It was just like the arm looked sweet. It was huge, but it was not because the bicep was big. So I ended up wearing it again, and I learned how to use it. Now, the scouting report was, throw me in, you know, run something in on his hands. And if it was too far in, it was just one of those things where I got hit a lot. But that it was all had to do with the scouting report, and I'd rather take one off the bicep and still be able to play instead of having a broken rib. But I'm not going to lie, I figured out how to use that elbow pad pretty good.
I got a play. I want to throw this up. Tell me if you can see this on your screen. Because this
absolutely, I can see it.
Okay, because this is a fun play of yours. Out at the plate.
Look at you go.
I what went through my mind, I couldn't tell you. I don't know. Just like, jump.
Because there, look at that.
Right now, my whole bag.
Look at that. I mean, that is a fun freeze frame for baseball. And then I had another one.
That picture in my basement.
Oh, yeah, I mean, it's a great one, just improv. And then there's another play at the plate that's even funnier here, which is this is a walk-off run you scored in Oakland.
Push pause real quick because I'm going to tell you what, this is a lesson. If you guys, Trevor, you give lessons or whatever, the main thing, and nobody does it even in the big leagues, and my old man taught me this a long time ago, you never take your eyes off the ball, ever, ever, ever. And I literally tell all the little league kids that I had, I don't care, but you're on, because you never know what's going to happen. And so that was honestly, and this was a game before, this was the All-Star break game, and we were tied with the Angels. And I want to say this was Rodriguez's in, so it had to be the ninth inning or 10th inning. And so you don't ever, because you just don't know what's going to happen. And honestly, you can watch, you can see stuff like this in Little League games twice a game.
Oh, yeah. So if anyone, but
this level,
let's play it.
So there's going to be a replay, but K-Rod on the mound just doesn't catch the ball. I'll go back. Here it is.
He was mad because the ball was probably a strike and the umpire called it a ball.
Oh, yeah, that is a nice pitch.
Everyone's pissed off.
Molina throws it back. And, yeah, he just didn't squeeze it.
Oh, that's good stuff right there, run. Chavi. Okay.
For the walk-off. Yeah, and I mean, that A's team, like Trev said, that's a pretty fun squad you had there for a couple years. Is Moneyball your favorite movie or least favorite movie?
Least. I wasn't there for those years. I do remember when I went back and I saw Billy, they were filming like at noon, and I was seeing all the clubhouse guys and everything, and you know, Brad Pitt, they're out at the stadium. I'm like, how big is your head now, Billy?
My gosh.
Not only do you think you did this whole analytic, but you got Brad Pitt playing you.
Yeah,
I've said that too. They should not have done that. They should not have given Billy Brad Pitt playing him because forever.
He's not even around anymore. He's trying to like find some soccer. I mean, he's still obviously his name's on the team, but he's doing something with soccer. Big Brad Pitt played me, which, you know what, good for him. But
when I was there, I only played there for half a season, but they signed me, and I go, and spring training, I'm going in to go get some work done, and I see someone sitting on the table. I'm like, that's not a player. And it was Billy, and he just walked in there, and he would just plop down on a training table. He'd get work done. I'm like, hey, man, I kind of got a game here in a couple hours.
You mind? Just pleasure. You can. I don't care if you're starting pitchers there, getting ready to get a rub down, or Brad Pitt played me. I'm gonna go before him.
Exactly. It's how it was. It's how it was there.
I wanted to ask.
You're right. I was there for 2.5 years. Nah, you're right. But I will say that 2016, that was the best team I've ever played on, and I still to this day say we should have won. We had the best team out of everybody, and we ended up sweeping Minnesota. And the Tigers and Yankees played all 5 games. We had 5 days off at the Coliseum and just sat there, you know, taking BP, obviously, at the Coliseum. It's just like nobody's in the stadium. And then Tigers came in and just kicked our butts. We had such a good team, though.
I wanted to ask you about that team because, as you're saying, I mean, it's a great team, but it's also, I mean, that pitching staff has a bunch of video game dudes that, like, you kind of dream of catching. Like, how do you resist calling that Zito curveball, like, not every other pitch? How was it catching those guys, or who was your favorite to catch on those teams, or maybe all time?
No, that was the best staff in all. The best guy, I can ask this a lot, too. With the best stuff at one point that I've ever caught was Rich Harden, and it was – he was throwing 100, and he didn't even know what it was. He called it a changeup, but it was like a slider. It was like a palm ball, but it ended up, I mean, at 90. And he had a fork ball. It was like a knuckleball. He was probably, out of 1 year, the best stuff I've ever caught. I mean, just like, it's hard to catch. I can only imagine how hard it is to hit. So, I mean, that team, I mean, you had Zito, Dan Heron, Harden, Joe Blanton, Esteban Loaiza, who's now in jail for drug smuggling or whatever.
Yeah. Is he really?
Drugs.
Yeah. I mean, it was just like you knew you had a shot to win every night. And it's fun as a player when you go, and I was on a lot of bad teams. So myself being there in that 2016 with those guys, I'm like, we just need to score a couple runs. And, you know, Frank Thomas, Milton Bradley, who was awesome because he just didn't know what was going to happen, who was going to come in. He'd be, hey, guys. And the next day, you wouldn't say a word. And I got the biggest kick out of that. I'd say myself, we're putting hitting runs on ourselves.
Yeah.
Because whoever was managing, so we were, Kotze and I ran the team. We were, hey, hit run. Go up, who cares? Just swing it. I mean, it was so much fun as a player. I mean, Bobby Crosby, Mark Ellis, Eric Chavez, Jay Payton came over, Nick Swisher, who's another treat. I mean, it was just a fun team. So, but I think we had too many days off in between at the end.
Yeah, that's never good. When you have those layoffs, it doesn't matter. I mean, yeah, you want to rest a little bit. Maybe a day is good. But when you start going 3, 4, 5 days, I mean, it's definitely a disadvantage. If you guys, like you said, you swept the Twins, then you had to wait around for the other series to finish. That's never good.
No, I mean, if you're fortunate enough to get to the playoffs, you don't want any time. That's because your adrenaline kicks in, and it doesn't matter how banged up you are, you're going to go out and play because there's nothing more exciting. It took me 10 years to get there, and it was everything and more. But I remember I let off for the A's, and Johan Santana struck me out. I never let go of my bat. My bat goes flying over the first base dugout. just in the Metrodome, but I was shaking. And Trevor, you know what I'm talking about? Like that first at bat you have in spring training, where your body's not in baseball shape, and your legs or knees are shaking. That's how I felt in that first at bat in the playoffs. I mean, it was that cool.
That's awesome.
Talked about doing whatever it needs to do to win. As a catcher, you were also speedy on the bases. You basically have the record for most steals by a catcher. You do have it in the modern era. They're all everyone else from like the 1800 and whatnot. Is that something that you took pride in? Was that just you finding the perfect time to run? Back when you were stealing 20 bags a game, were you a legit speedster in the game, or was it more just being a smart base runner?
I mean, I was definitely faster. I mean, everybody thinks the When you think of a catcher, everybody kind of thinks of Engelbert, you know, the Snickers hanging out of his pocket. And you know, there are certain guys that, I mean, I'm not the biggest guy. You know, you go with Mike Lieberthal, Brad Ausmus, and, you know, even today, Russell Martin. There's a lot of guys, and I'm just trying to throw out names that are, you know, not as big. You don't have to be that big old backstop guy. I could run. I could always run. I played quarterback in high school, and I didn't have an offensive line. And we're playing Compton, Luzinger. I can go on and on. Trevor, you know what I'm talking about. All those big runs. I got my speed from there. But I will say this. It helped me out being a catcher, knowing when to go, knowing even, you know, later in my career, whether it be – I'll tell you what, the delay steal, everybody teaches, hey, do a two hops, do three. Because you're not trying to mess with the catcher. Do three shuffles. It's such an easy bag. You walk in, you have enough, got to have a lot. You can't be scared to get thrown out. But I knew times to go and times not to go and who was catching, who's quick. And I think a lot of it had to do with being a catcher. It helped me out tremendously.
I like the three-hop rule because, you said, you're not trying to fool the catcher.
No.
The catcher can not be fooled. He can throw the ball down to second base. If there's no one there to cover the damn base, you're going to be
exactly
sick.
Exactly. And
so
if your shoulders
are... You're trying to fool the guy, the shortstop or the second base, whoever's covering.
And yeah, and it's everybody goes, oh, two hops. And then, no, three shuffles. But now when you get to that second one and you try to get that third one, you feel like you're out in the middle of nowhere. Mm-hmm. But I'm telling you what, out of however many bags I stole, I guarantee you 80 of them were on a delay steal. And people That's knew awesome. I was going to do it.
You just don't see that anymore. You don't see a delayed steal anymore. That's one of those plays.
And analytics guys probably hate it. And there's a free base. In 2001, and I wasn't sure. Take me back, and maybe it's an easy answer, but I think 2001 was the year that you played a little outfield for the Pirates. Was that injuries? Was there another catcher? Or what was going on there? And then now talking to you a little bit, I mean, you're a catcher. were you like a fish out of water, or what was that?
Well, it was because of my thumb. They tried to give me days off. So they would put me in the outfield. And then the next day I would catch. So I never really had a chance to work out. I'll never forget the first day I played. I was in Atlanta, and Quilby Alvarez hit a foul ball down the line, and I slid into the wall. Number one web jam. It was awesome. Boy, was it downhill from there. It was awful the rest of the time. I couldn't pay attention. I'd made like 8 errors in 20 games, and it was just awful because I'd be yelling at fans or, you know, just yelling at people. Because there's one game I ended up calling the game from the outfield for Keith Osick, who was catching. But yeah, I made a number one web gym, and then it was just straight downhill from there.
Yeah, you go from a catcher who's involved in every damn play, like calling the game, to being in the outfield where you could stand out there for an entire game and do absolutely nothing except back up a base.
How did that work? Calling pitches from you were
left arm down, like right arm up, change up, kind of something like that.
That is awesome.
We gotta try to find some video.
Is that snake ball? That's the one that got me at least 4 or 5 times. Like coming up ready to throw, and next thing I know, jeez.
I played outfield a little bit in Texas. They whatever grass they use out there, because they have to use like a different grass. It's so damn hot. That ball snakes like crazy. And I guess probably in the new stadium they won't have that. But I'm totally with you. I'm not like. The outfield.
That ball will, it'll find you. Oh, outfield? Okay. Pitcher shagging BP. No. That ball will find you.
Yeah. We saw that this last postseason with Gresham, the guy for the right fielder in Milwaukee. You know, people are like, oh, how'd he miss that ball? It's not easy. You're running full speed. And you saw that ball took a hop towards the other way.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't catch it. And if it happens in any other point like, of the season, whatever. But it happened at that exact moment. It's tough.
Ability that these big leaguers have is unbelievable. And on TV, as a fan, it looks so easy from hitting to the ball's coming in 95 and sinking. And then, you know, like that hop that we're talking about. It's not that easy.
No.
Jimmy is a catcher at heart. His catching career got stopped before yours, and
when curveballs exist became,
yeah, the curveballs got him. But so I know in his head he can't let this go. What was the discussion for you to call pitches in the outfield? Like, did you just tell the catcher?
They wanted to keep my bat in lineup.
Well, no. But when you said you're, you know, right arm change up, left arm down fastball, what did you tell the catcher you were going to call?
Yeah,
the pitchers,
I was telling the catcher from left field.
Did you tell them before the game and like, this is my game?
Hey, dude, I'm going to call the game because I can't stay focused here. I'm too busy yelling at people. It was without a doubt. He goes, all right, go ahead. You know him better than I do.
Who was the catcher?
That's Keith Olsen.
It was probably a nice day off for him. He was like, cool, I'll be mindless back
here. Oh, yeah. He goes, no, you know the team better than I do. I mean, you've been back there. I'm getting a start. Thanks.
Did the pitcher know they were coming from you?
That way the pressure's not on me.
did the pitcher know it was coming from you? Did he ever shoot you a look on the mound and just like shake you off in left field? Like, nah, man.
No, he should have, right?
Yeah, I want
to. It was Kip Wells. He knew too.
We got to look for that, game. We got to see if the catcher's looking out there.
It'd be funny if the announcer kept saying, like, why is he looking at left field?
That's how it should have been. But now I was just left field, and I sent him to Keith, and he would every pitch. But I was locked in. I don't think I made an error that game.
And another thing I dug up while looking at all your stats and stuff, and I was trying to see what pitcher you had the best numbers off of, and it's a potential Hall of Famer. Do you know who you have the most home runs, best numbers off of?
Well, I know I have. I didn't hit many home runs, but I think I have 3 home runs off of Schilling.
Yeah. Your numbers for Schilling are pretty good, considered that he's probably a Hall of Famer skill-wise.
You know who I had a hard time with is John Smith. Guys, you don't know. I mean, Trevor, am I right or wrong? Especially when you're in your own division or you get older and older, you know how much their ball cuts, how much it sinks, how you know as a hitter if you have, say, over 10 at-bats against them. But the guys that you have 5 or – those are the guys I had – tough time. I loved facing, you know, Maddox, Johns. You knew they're gonna be around the plate, number one, and you knew you're gonna get some. Don't miss that one pitch that you get to hit, because then you're done.
Yeah, I mean, everyone, you always have your guys that you crush. You always have your guys that you're not gonna do well against. I didn't mind like the haven't seen him before thing, but there were just some guys I saw the ball against, and there were some guys who I faced a ton, and I never saw the ball against. Scherzer was one. We always kind of just let that happen because he's Max Scherzer, and he's an excellent pitcher.
Without a doubt.
I'm okay with that. But my guy was Ubaldo Jimenez, and I just couldn't hit him.
Okay, you know? So, yeah, but there's just certain guys.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. There was one guy – this is actually a funny story. It's my last year playing in 2010. We're in Anaheim. And I'm up to bat, and it's like maybe like my second or third bat, and this guy comes in. I still couldn't tell you the guy's name. Down 0-1, look up. And I'm looking on the scoreboard. I'm 0 for 25 against this guy. I don't even know who he is. It's Hector something. And so I'm like, oh. Like, I had to take a step back out of the box. All I know is his cousin used to play pitch for the Blue Jays and was really nasty for a year. And that's Escobar maybe, or I don't even know who he is. I'm 0 for 25. And I swear to you, I hit a ball right off his toe to the second baseman. Gets me out. So I'm like, 0 for 26.
We'll have to look that up.
Unbelievable. So there's guys you have success with, guys you just can't get a hit.
Soria?
That's crazy.
Or no, it's an Angels guy. It's Fuentes.
It was an Angels guy at the time. I don't even know where I faced him that many times at.
Could have been Irvin Santana?
No. I know I didn't hit him well either, but it was looking the bullpen. He came out of the bullpen.
Catchers? If you throw on a game, are there catchers that you love? Like, you just love to watch them play. I feel like there's an obvious answer to that. But at the same time, you always hear like, oh, I love to watch this guy pitch, or love to watch Andrelton Simmons play shortstop. Are there a couple dudes that if you turn on a Wednesday night game and they're behind the plate, you're like, yes? Or is it guys you have relationships with?
No, I like watching baseball. I enjoy watching baseball. you know, one thing that I always did though, as a catcher, is I'd always watch the other catcher, whoever it might've been. And this is something once again, to tell younger kids is everybody's different. And when a certain coach will sit here and say, hey, you know, do it this way. Well, okay. Then you change. Well, if you're having success at doing it your way, then you continue to do it. And when it gets to the point to where you're not having that success anymore, then you don't do it anymore. I watched everybody and I would try to take something out of someone's game, and it might or might not work for what I did behind the plate. But if I saw something that I like, I would totally try to go do it. And that's not me. But
does one come to mind per chance?
Catcher. What's that?
Does one come to mind? I mean, it doesn't have
Osmus, to. Osmus, Lieberthal, I mean, even Piazza in certain areas, you know, whether it be catching footwork, Ivan Rodriguez, I can go on and on and on. I would watch every catcher that I ever played against, even, you know, whoever was backing me up or whatever, and try it. If you think you know everything in this game, you're not going to be in it long, because it's never going to happen. There's never going to be a person that knows everything about this game. It's and you just got to try new things. So for a kid that is trying, wants to be a catcher, watch everybody. Just watch. But I love baseball, so I watch anything.
Who's the best? Who's the best catch and throw guy you ever saw? Because I feel like credit for hitting ability, but I want to know who the best catch and throw guy is that you ever saw.
Catch and throw guy? Now Salvador Perez. Without it, I've never seen a big man that way throughout my whole entire baseball career. Be able to put the ball on it. This guy's 6'3", 270, and he's very athletic back there. I've never seen anybody with an arm like that that just can put the ball where he wants to at any given time. I mean, there's a lot of other guys. Now, you know, catching the ball, Sal wouldn't even be close to my top 100. But catch and throw guys, unbelievable. So yes, there's a lot of guys with unbelievable arms. And at the end of the day, though, yes, it's getting better, because you can go and hit 240, and if you know how to call a game, then you'll be around in the big leagues if you stay healthy for a while. But kind of back when I played, you better hit 280 or higher.
Yeah, I think that's really important what you just said there about catch and throw guys. Is you can have the quickest release, you can have the strongest arm, but if you're not putting the ball where it needs to be put, guys are going to steal bases on you. And the guys that threw out the most, guys that I played with, the guys that always threw guys out, they would just put the ball in the bag. And, you know, you didn't have to go up the line. You didn't have to reach up for it, bring your tag down. Those guys that were accurate with the ball, those are the guys that throw people out. So, yeah, Sal, he was one of those guys. He loved to throw, or still loves to throw, and he is accurate. And that's just like – that's how you get those percentages.
Being accurate is unbelievable. He was or is that good. And, you know, I'll be honest with you. Like, for a guy like Sal, this is probably a good break for him, because he just came off of Tommy John. So he's going to have that other 2 months
true.
To – get prepared. But I've never seen anything like it, especially when he was, you know, rookie, first 2-3 years, whatever. It was just because he's huge.
He's thrown me out a few times. I'm not a stolen base guy, though.
I
don't know how much you should have been stealing.
It was Hector Carrasco. That's the guy you're talking about. He only struck
Hector
you
Carrasco.
Out.
I was close.
He only struck you out twice. But
I was over like 25, wasn't I?
0-20. Yeah. Oh, for 15. Oh, for 15. I had a.
No. There's more.
I had another question. Is according to all my research, you never played a single game at AAA. You went straight from AA to being the opening day starting catcher. So was that a surprise, or did you understand? Like, I know you were first round pick, and you're flying through, but that spring training, do you know? Like, hey, they're having me pegged to be the starter, because, I mean, realistically, AAA comes after AA, but you skipped it.
I just went out and played. Then I remember it was funny, because I kind of had an idea, I guess, going in, because they brought Lance Parrish into camp. And he was going to try to back me up, be the tutor or whatever. But Keith Osick ended up beating him out. So I kind of had an idea, if I go out and have a good spring, that I might. But I just went out and played. and let everything else. I think when, especially when you're young, if you start worrying about things like that, you're going to be thinking about it when you're hitting. You're going to be thinking about it when you're playing, like running bases, whatever it may be. So I honestly just went out and played. And I think AAA now is more, you're better in up and down guys. Double A is where your prospects are going to be at. I mean, it, you know, both are good baseball. And Trevor, correct me if I'm wrong, but you know, you're 6-year free agents, whatever. They're going to be a Triple A, and but you're the guys you draft, the guys that have a chance are going to be at Double A. And so, I mean, I don't know if that had anything to do with it or not. I think the slot and low ball year weren't there anymore, and let's see what he can do.
Yeah, I would say that at Double A you have your prospects. They're already there. They bleed into AAA a little bit, but like you said, usually AAA is kind of the fringe guys, a little bit older guys who are up and down. You are going to get some prospects in that league, but if you're looking for straight, young, talented baseball players, Double A is probably the league that has the most of them. So yeah, the baseball there is, I would say, at times it's better than AAA, but AAA is more consistent because you have guys that have been there and they're just more consistent with the routine. They have more experience. So then that's what the big leagues is. It's the best players who are consistent. You know, you still have that in AAA, you have the talent. But when you get to the big leagues, it's all about talent and being consistent with that talent. You don't have the guys that fluctuate a ton. That's the biggest separator from the big leagues to the minor leagues, is that consistency factor.
Man,
Very true.
I could, you're a baseball guy through and through. I could ask you questions all day, and I won't torment you with that, but I'll leave my final question as an open door for you. Do you have a good either all-star game story, fight with an umpire behind you behind the dish, or maybe like a brawl story that you'd like to share? Because I know within those three topics, you got to have something good.
I've been trying to find your brawls on the internet, and I cannot find them.
They're impossible. The Marlins one is impossible to find.
When you went after Lackey, can't find that video.
Yeah, you know, I had a hard. You know, I'll give you a funny story. I had a hard time with people yelling at me, and
me too.
I could take a lot. I could take a lot of stuff, but I had a, Joe Kennedy, he was pitching for the Rockies, and this is very similar with John Lackey. And I respect John Lackey, but, you know, he shouldn't have yelled at me. The bases were loaded, and it was a 2-1 count. I got free ribbies out there with one out. And Jake, get that thing out. And I lost it. But Joe Kennedy, very, very similar. He hit me, and I'm walking halfway down first base. And he goes, yeah, bye. About my elbow pad. We got in a fight. The next year, he gets traded to Oakland. And God bless his soul. He passed away. But it was, that's another sad story. So, but, you can just tell how uncomfortable he was walking into the Oakland, you know, clubhouse when he got traded at the deadline. I went up, I'm like, hey, Joe, Jason, we got in a fight last year. You know, I just kind of broke the ice. he was so much better, but, what a good dude. And, you know, he ended up passing away, but, that's just off the top of my head story.
That's good. That's good.
Yeah,
that's what I wanted. Oh.
We share one thing. We led the league, both you and I, 1 year in a specific category. And I didn't lead the league in a lot of categories, okay? And this one is actually not a good category. You led the league and grounded into double plays in 2005. And I also led the league and grounded into double plays. Not sure.
Yeah, but you know what? That's pretty cool 13. Stuff. Because, listen, at the end of the day, you're making the game quicker. You get that Bud Light a lot quicker.
Yeah. I always tell people,
2 hours, there you go.
You got to hit the ball hard to hit in a double play. Okay, that's what I tell
Without people. A doubt. Without a doubt. Well, congratulations. We got to make some type of trouble for us.
Yeah. Cool. Hey, thank you for joining us, man. We really appreciate it.
It was a pleasure. And anytime.
Do you have anything you want to plug?
No, you know what? The only thing I'm going to plug is, guys, just stay safe. Everybody be safe out there and stay at home and just let this whole thing take. That's the only thing I can say, but I mean, that's kind of just common sense. But be good, stay safe.
Cool. Love it.
You're welcome on anytime.
Yeah, man. Seriously.
Guys, be good. It's a pleasure.
Thanks. All right, Jace.
All right. As you guys heard, that was Jason Kendall, who sat down. I think the interview is around an hour. There's probably half hour of technical difficulties beforehand that he would patiently sat through and figured out so we could all hear each other without an echo and all that. I think Jake, myself, and Trevor post-game all were like, we have so many more questions. that was a fun one. That is a baseball man right there.
There was a period of time where I wanted to get the phrase like baseball guy going because football guy is a thing. And Jason Kendall would be my figurehead. That was awesome. He will be back on the podcast. He had a chance to plug his own podcast and he didn't. go check that out.
It's called Wrestling with Sports. He will be back. It's called Wrestling with Sports. Plouffe is going on now. Yeah. Just to recap a little bit, the flower story was pretty funny that he shared that.
Unreal.
And I think calling pitches from left field, I told Jake after this we recorded, like, thank you so much for doing the follow-up on that, Jake, because I needed to know when he told the catcher, hey, I'm going to call from left field, if that catcher put up a fight, because it wasn't an ask. It wasn't a, hey, would you like me to call from left field? It was a, hey, I'm calling the pitches from left field.
And it's just,
dude, he can't even see the break. Like, he doesn't have like a good sense of,
doesn't have a good angle. And it just shows how like entrenched he was in baseball that it's tough to almost get into the modern day mindset of, you know, analytics and calling pitches and stuff like that, that he was so well respected. And hey, maybe there is another side to the story that wouldn't necessarily shock me, but I don't think there is. Like, I just think it was the way he depicted it was like the other catcher was like, yeah, man, you know what's going on.
That's fantastic. So go check out his podcast. I would say tweet at him, but I'm sure he doesn't give a fuck if you tweet at him or not.
He doesn't care.
And hopefully we'll catch up with him in the future because that was great. Thank you guys for hanging out with us and listening. And excuse me while I slowly find the outro music. Here we go. We will see you in the middle of the week. Wednesday, Tuesday, Thursday. Depends if there's news or not. Thanks.